You're listening to an On The Move Media Co. production.
Well, okay, I walked in the room and it was before we started the podcast and you asked me, you know, how are you feeling? And it's, oh, wait, we got to get this. The truth is, how I feel is like, I can't believe this is happening in 2 days. Like, I can't believe I'm really going to do this. But really, okay, you're right. Boston as an event is a legend. Yeah. Like the legends run Boston and has made over, you know, so many historic years has made this event its own legend.
Right.
And the course is its own character and all that stuff. The weather of the day, like it's just such a huge event that really it's one of the very few running events that transcends just running, you know, Right. The running world. It feels like all of America is kind of paying some amount of attention to the Boston Marathon at some point. So I feel like this is an event that if you're going to be a pro marathoner, you know, put a star on the calendar 8, 9, 10 months out and say, okay, I'm dedicating this huge chunk of my life to this one pursuit. And so for me, you know, this opportunity came up following my failure at the trials.
Right.
And so it's only really been on the calendar for nine weeks. So for me to have 9 weeks to get ready, I feel a little bit like somebody just grabbed me and pushed me into the deep end. And it really has been exhilarating. So I haven't had the same amount of time to prepare, but also not the same amount of time to worry. So yeah, I'm just gonna get out there and see how I feel and how it goes.
That was Jenny Simpson. This is Marnie Salop. Thanks for tuning into my podcast, Marnie on the Move. Each week, I will be inviting interesting, innovative, movers and shakers to join me on the show and share their story. You will discover and hear from thought leaders, experts, influencers, and entrepreneurs from the worlds of wellness, sports, beauty, fitness, fashion, and more. Marnie on the Move will feature an eclectic mix of people I know, work with, and think are generally doing cool things. On each episode, I sync up with my guests about life, career, and training, and showcase their expertise
Hello,
and story.
Hello, welcome, and welcome back to the Marnie on the Move podcast, Boston Marathon Edition. This week, we teamed up with the Westin Hotels and Resorts, Westin Seaport Boston, and Westin Copley Place to bring you this series of 6 conversations from the heart of the city and Marathon Central with Olympic, professional, elite, and recreational runners. Kicking things off today with 3-time Olympian, gold, 2-time silver, and bronze medalist, track and field athlete who just added the marathon to her repertoire, Jenny Simpson. Jenny and I sync up about what brings her to Boston and what she's looking forward to on this iconic course and race day. We talk about her decision to switch gears from the 1500 and mile distance to the marathon and where her passion for running began and what she continues to love about this sport. Shout out to our partners at Westin Hotel and Resorts, Ketone IQ, and special thanks to Puma and their amazing team for coordinating this interview. Westin Hotels and Resorts is hospitality's global leader in well-being for more than a decade. They empower guests to transcend the rigors of travel while on the road through the brand's 6 pillars of well-being: sleep well, eat well, move well, feel well, work well, and play well. At more than 240 hotels and resorts in over 40 countries and territories, guests can benefit from distinct wellness experiences, including the brand's iconic and award-winning Heavenly Bed, the signature Westin workout offerings, such as its fitness studio with TRX fitness equipment, and its versatile gear lending program featuring the latest in recovery and strength training from Hyperice and Bala. I had the pleasure of experiencing this firsthand while in town for the Boston Marathon when staying at the Westin Boston Seaport. I got to experience their Run Westin program, went for a run in the area with one of their signature maps, and had an amazing time. In 2023, Westin Hotels and Resorts teamed up with Abbott World Marathon Majors to get travelers race ready from start to finish in the first ever hospitality collaboration. The collaboration, activating at select Westin properties in Boston, London, Berlin, Chicago, New York City, and Tokyo, will offer new, tailored experiences to help marathoners of all levels get to the starting line and cross the finish line, as well as offer exclusive perks to celebrate the achievements of 6-star finishers. If you're headed out on a racecation
or looking to explore a city through running, I highly recommend checking in to the nearest Westin hotel and resort. Now, on to my conversation with Jenny.
Middle of Times Square, and I did a quick interview, which was a learning experience. One of the ones where I'm not going to be forgetting my microphones next time or interviewing people in the middle of traffic. It's so exciting to be here with you today in Boston.
Yeah, New York was such a great moment, kind of building me up to this moment today. So I think it's great. We met in the chaos of Times Square. Nothing is supposed to go smoothly in Times Square, so I think you kind of nailed it.
Yeah.
And then here we are with this beautiful production set and everything. And so we're doing great. We're both doing great.
So, I mean, is this your second marathon?
Yeah, yes.
Official as
exactly.
A professional athlete.
Exactly,
yes.
Yeah. So ran the majority of the trials, but not all of it. I had to drop out at mile 18, but so grateful. The Boston Marathon reached out and said, can you go 10 more weeks? Do you want to do this? And it felt like such a privilege to have an event like this still believe in me after, you know, the trials was such a disappointment. So I'm really grateful to be here.
But I mean, as a runner, you've been running your whole life. You started running in high school, you know, and as part of running, things happen.
That is so true. And not every day is going to be a great day.
Yeah.
And, you know, somewhere around half of them are not going to be great days, right?
Right.
But the trials was definitely a different experience in a way because I've never dropped out of anything. So to have to kind of wrap my mind around, because it was really around about mile 15 that I knew, like, not only is this not my day, but I'm no longer able to really be, like compete. Really, you know, I could continue running.
Right.
Fortunately, I didn't have, like, a serious injury or something, which can happen in the marathon. But so for those 3 miles between mile 15 and 18, I was kind of wrapping my mind around, am I really going to step off the course and be done for the day?
Yeah.
And that was a new experience for me.
Like, as an amateur athlete and a triathlete, like, I have done that because it's not my job. And I have had a tough time asking myself that question, like, do you really want to bail right now? Like, can you do it? And it is a tough one to answer. So what was going through your mind? If you don't mind talking about it.
Of course.
Yeah. I mean, it's just interesting because I know a lot of athletes struggle with this.
Yeah.
And you're a professional athlete and Olympian. So it's like at every level.
If you are going to have a wild life, you're going to have ups and downs. And I want it all. So no, there's no trouble talking about it. I do remember having a very lucid thought as I'm approaching kind of, you know, running back up through downtown Orlando towards what would be the 18-mile mark, which was the most kind of practical and logistically appropriate place to step off the course. So that's why I finished my day there. But I remember having this really lucid thought that I have a choice between two really difficult things. I'm either going to run for another hour, and that hour is going to be really miserable and hard.
Right. Because,
you know, the loop is about 8 miles and that I had left to finish the race. Or I'm going to have to do the hard thing of kind of face the embarrassment of calling it a day early. And in life, sometimes you just have to pick your hard.
Yeah.
You know, both were going to be difficult. Making the Olympic team was out of the question. Having a great day was now out of the cards. So I just had to kind of choose my heart at that point. It was really difficult to step off the course. But in hindsight, I really wasn't thinking about racing in the near future. That wasn't part of the calculation in the moment, but I'm so grateful that I stepped off when I did, because I really did kind of save myself, not just physically, but also psychologically. I think I kind of saved myself to be able to then, get back out, train a couple more weeks, run New York, and then prepare for the Boston Marathon.
What was it that made you kind of shift gears and want to do this beast of a long distance marathon?
Yeah, well, you know, it's wild. I had 12 incredible years as a pro, really specializing in the 1500 and the mile. And like you said, went to Fifth Avenue Mile, won it 8 out of 9 times that I competed. I just had an incredible run of amazing experiences on the track. And I think you start to kind of sense when that era of your life might be coming to a close. And I was still running really well in the mile. I was still able to be explosive. In 2019, I made the final of the World Championship. So I'm still doing really well. But I thought the best gift that the success in this event can give me is if I accept the freedom to do whatever I want to do next.
Right.
And so sometimes, you know, you can take whatever the security that success can give you, and you can plant it into something new. So the marathon for me, it's like, it's totally crazy for me to like skip the 5K, skip the 10K, skip all these other things that just go straight to the marathon. But it has always intrigued me. It captured my imagination. And for me, it really feels like this is kind of a passion project. You know, you can take all the good advice and follow the rules and do the progression the way you're supposed to. Mm-hmm. But my years in the 15 went so well, I thought, I think I've earned myself the freedom to kind of do something that just because I want to see how good I can be at it. So that's what the marathon is for me.
I love that. You're talking to a risk taker over here. Like, yeah. I don't do anything by the books. I don't do anything the traditional way. And so I see that. That's really cool. There is something really magical about just like that freedom of like taking that risk and putting yourself out there and knowing that you can do it and like having to do all that work to get there.
Yeah, and for so many years, you know, I'm the woman that was supposed to do really well in the event that I was really good at. And there's some part of that script that it can be a little bit oppressive. It can be difficult because, you know, it's not as expected or okay to have a bad day when you're the woman that's been so good for so long.
Right.
So I faced that and kind of succeeded through it for a really long time. And then there was something about, you know, I switch over to something totally wild. I say I'm going to train for the marathon. And there's kind of this question in people's voice, like, but are you going to be good at it? And it just felt so good to have the freedom of like, I have no idea.
Like,
I have no idea.
Of course you are.
Yeah, and that felt really great because for so long it was like, Jenny's going to run a 15 and she's going to be great. And it felt like that pressure now is kind of off and I get to kind of build myself back towards the expectation that I'm going to do well again.
That's amazing that you had the sort of like foresight to be able to do that because, you know, a lot of people, it's almost like a career change, right? Like,
yeah.
In a way, and a lot of people are afraid to do that. And a lot of people struggle with that, especially after the pandemic, like switching gears, doing something new.
Yeah. Yeah, I do feel, I mean, I was saying early on that I'm changing sports because it did feel like going from the track, there's so little overlap, really surprisingly for them both being running, going from the track to the roads. It just felt like I'm totally changing sports. But I mean, a lot of people who've had either a career change or just a job change, or if you've moved, you know, cross country at some point in your life, you also understand the other side of the coin is like a whole new scene, all new people, like not all new, but a lot of new. It felt like a little bit of a recharge. And not to like the stability and the ongoing success and all the good things from the track is wonderful and it never got old, but it was just like this infusion of energy to have something new and something, you know, new relationships and people. Yeah.
And so Boston, I mean, what is this? This is like the race of all the races, right? Like Boston, what does it mean to you?
Well, okay, I walked in the room and it was before we started the podcast and you asked me, you know, how are you feeling? And then it's, oh, wait, we gotta get this. The truth is, how I feel is like, I can't believe this is happening in 2 days. Like, I can't believe I'm really gonna do this. But really, okay, you're right. Boston as an event is a legend.
Yeah.
Like the legends run Boston and has made over, you know, so many historic years has made this event its own legend.
Right.
And the course is its own character and all that stuff. The weather of the day, like it's just such a huge event that really it's one of the very few running events that transcends just running, you know, the running world. It feels like all of America is kind of paying some amount of attention to the Boston Marathon at some point. So I feel like this is an event that if you're going to be a pro marathoner, you know, put a star on the calendar 8, 9, 10 months out and say, okay, I'm dedicating this huge chunk of my life to this one pursuit. And so for me, you know, this opportunity came up following my failure at the trials.
Right.
And so it's only really been on the calendar for nine weeks. So for me to have 9 weeks to get ready, I feel a little bit like somebody just grabbed me and pushed me into the deep end. And
that's an awesome feeling.
Yeah, and it really has been exhilarating. So I haven't had the same amount of time to prepare, but also not the same amount of time to worry. So yeah, I'm just gonna get out there and see how I feel and how it goes.
I think that is gonna be, I think that's a huge like success secret. I think it's gonna be awesome because I don't know, I always think like I build things up so much in my head.
Sure.
And then when I get there, I'm like so nervous about something. But if I don't actually think about it and I just do it, it's like I'm doing it.
One of the funny, unique things about this experience for me is I am such a planner. Like my personality, and I think that's one of the reasons I was so good on the track, was like I had thought through every single tiny little possibility. So by the time something happened, I had great instincts for racing because I had already thought through every possible variation of the playout of this race.
Like a triathlete.
Yeah, exactly. And so this event, like I remember several times through just even the last few days, people describing parts of the course. And I've never driven the course. I've never run the course. I don't know the course. And that I cannot describe to you how far that is from who I am as a competitor and an athlete and just like my normal personality. And so I don't know what to think of that. I don't know if that's going to be good for me, if it's going to be hard for me, but I have been thinking, you know, somebody said something about there being, you know, 4 Newton Hills and 5 turns in the whole marathon, and then you turn up Boylston Street and this and that. I don't know any of this. Like, I'm hearing it. I've heard it through the years.
Right, because you're on a track, typically.
Yeah, and also because, like, I only knew I was going to actually put the shoes on and race this 9 weeks ago. So I just haven't had the same kind of preparation. So it'll be interesting and a brand new journey for me to see, can I fit this into my life, you know, and kind of deviate from my normal personality and allow things to just kind of unfold? And how does that feel and how does that go? So I'm excited to see how that goes.
Shout out to our partners at Ketone IQ. Ketone IQ is fuel for your brain. These exogenous ketones give you a clean energy boost without sugar or caffeine. I am a big fan of exogenous ketones for training, racing, and everyday health. They increase your energy, your focus, and metabolic flexibility. They are also the brain's preferred fuel source over glucose. I've been using Ketone IQ individual shots on training runs and in races. Usually, I take one 30 minutes before a run or a ride, which I feel about 20 minutes into my session. I drink a second bottle after an hour, and so on. One of my favorite things about Ketone IQ is that it's drinkable, which is key when it comes to exogenous ketones. They are an asset to whatever nutrition plan you are following, and you don't have to give up your carbs. They work independently. Imagine you're in a traffic jam, and suddenly a new lane opens up. This is the exogenous ketone lane. Ketone IQ works with top Olympic athletes like Des Linden and Michael Andrews, Ironman world champion Sam Laidlow, and top world tour cycling team Visma Lisa Bike. It's time to level up your athletic performance and everyday health by adding Ketone IQ to your workouts and daily routine. Visit ketone.com/Marnie for 30% off your first subscription order. Discount is automatically applied at checkout. That's ketoneiq.com/Marnie. Back to our conversation.
I think it's going to be awesome. And so are you, what shoes are you running in? Which Pumas?
Yeah, the Deviate Elite. They have a third version, and it's an amazing shoe. I did run in the Fast R in the trials, and I've made a switch.
Okay.
So I think the shoes are really really different styles, but I think they're comparable in their ability to, you know, match up in races for people. I think they're both really great super shoes, and it goes to show because at the trials, the Puma athletes, you could see it was a pretty even split between who chose the Fast R and who chose the Deviate Elite. I just thought, you know, the trials didn't go well, and it has nothing, absolutely nothing to do with the shoes.
Yes, of course not.
But sometimes it's nice to just switch things up. So after the trials, I thought, you know what, I'm going to do a couple things totally new, and one of them is I'm going to switch up my shoes.
Now, what do you like about those shoes, like the Deviate Elite?
Well, they just feel so good, right? I mean, they're just so cushy. So, of course, my career starts way before super shoes. And I did all kinds of training and competing and lots of long runs. You know, I was a 1500 meter runner, but 15, 16 mile long runs was a typical weekend.
Right.
So I've done many years of long runs. And the thing about these shoes is not only does it feel, you know, you put them on and you feel kind of bouncy and you feel light and, oh, these are going to be great for the run, but it's also just how your body feels after the run is over. You know, I used to come off of my long run and you just feel like that muscle damage starting to like sink into you. And it's true. I mean, the super shoes are really saving people's bodies in a way that I think we didn't really predict.
Yeah, it is interesting. But then I think also sometimes like if you run in them too much when you're not racing, like I think it's good to like test out your shoes, right? So
The debate. That's definitely the debate. It's like, you know, muscle damage is not entirely a bad thing. I mean, that's how your body rebuilds stronger, right? You break it down and you rebuild stronger. And so some muscle damage is absolutely necessary for you to get better, whether you're lifting dumbbells or whether you're out on a long run, right?
It's
that's science.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's just like, I think it's a little bit like how we fuel our bodies. Like, everybody's going to be a little bit different. It's kind of good to follow a philosophy and be open to like adjusting and changing if it does or doesn't work for you. And if you follow the science can kind of take you in different places. So I think there's this temptation to think how we use super shoes in training, there's a black and white correct and wrong answer. And probably it's more individualized than that.
I was going to say, I haven't had like any issues with run, because I'm always testing shoes, like all different kinds of shoes, and I haven't really had any like issues. But you know, someone had said to me, I don't know what happened, but somebody was like, maybe it's because you are always running in super shoes. And I was like, I don't think it has anything to do with the shoes. I think it has to do with like walking, not even running.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah.
There's a lot of discussion about like how your brain is predicting that your foot is hitting the ground.
Right.
It's very different with super shoes. And if you, so to me, my question first is then should you always run in super shoes because your brain can kind of make that adjustment? Or is, and is it problematic to be switching back and forth between kind of old school stiff trainers with no foam back to these shoes that are stacked with a lot of foam? I think one of the things for me, and
you've run in all the shoes. Yeah.
Yeah, I want to be clear. I do not know the answer. I have a lot of questions, but I have no answers.
Somebody will comment on it somewhere.
There you go. So, but one of the things that just in my own experience has been a little bit of trial and error and a little bit of debate with the super shoes is that they really are not as stable. So if you run on anything other than really smooth pavement, you know, you hit a rut in the road or you're on kind of a soft surface and it can kind of send your foot flying in the wrong direction. The physics of it is different because it is a less stable shoe. Or if you take a turn and you corner, and this is not unique to like one brand of shoe. It's just the nature of, of the foam of these super shoes. So I think that makes, I think that is the cause of some injuries, and it's just the nature of the instability, not necessarily like your foot hitting the ground in those shoes.
Yeah, well, I'm really glad that Puma has a super shoe.
Yeah, and they have two, which is amazing. Right. Like, I feel really fortunate that I'm with a brand where you have an option. It's not like this is the one lane you can run in and we hope it works for you.
Yeah.
They're two very different shoes and really designed and modeled for two different types of strides. And so if one doesn't work for you, there's another.
What was your stride with the faster? Is that more for someone who's who's running on the forefoot, right?
Yes, and somebody coming from the track, I have the classic form that is made for the Fastar.
Yeah.
So much higher knee lift, bigger back kick, you know, just a bigger, when you look at somebody in profile and you watch them running, I make a much bigger circle with my foot. And you know, the alternative is what people call a shuffler. You know, somebody's feet stay a lot closer to the ground.
A triathlete shuffler.
Yeah, exactly. And so both can be very efficient strides, but the physics and the dynamics of it are different. Now is when we need to introduce like an actual biomechanics scientist to explain it in greater depth.
I can't
do that.
Do that in AI. I'll bring it in post, Jason.
Exactly. But there are many, many different running strides, but those are kind of two categories, and I definitely fit in the taller stride for sure.
Yeah, I love all the new Puma shoes that they've been coming out with in the last few years. Like I've seen, like it's just been such. Like when I was a kid, I wore Pumas, right? And they were like one. And I talked about this with Betsy from Track Shack.
So oh, sure.
I know that you're from Orlando, the area, and you kind of got your start running at Track
John
Shack.
John and Betsy Hughes sold me my very first pair of running shoes. Yeah, and there, yeah, Track Shack has been in my life for so long, and that whole crew over there, I mean, truly, I don't just say this, they are like family to me. I mean, people that I call when things in my life are going on that have nothing to do with running. So I feel very fortunate and close to them. But Puma, it's been so fun and exciting to watch them enter the high performance space in training shoes, you know, yeah. High performance running training shoes. And especially in the last, you know, 4 years or so, they've come on really strong. And the trainers that they have are really, really great. Yeah. I train in the Velocity a lot. I think that's a really great shoe. It's a way to stay in their most current line of shoes, but get kind of away from having the stiff plate in the shoe or having so much foam in the shoe. So I feel like the Velocity is kind of the perfect balance between the new super shoe technology and kind of the feel of an old school trainer. So I like the Velocity a lot.
And now how much mileage are you putting in? Is that like a strategy secret? You don't have to share it if it is.
No.
I don't want Des Linden to hear.
Yeah, no, it's fine. I mean, the funny thing is that I think, especially when you get to the pro elite level, there's a lot of overlap. Most people are doing, you know, there's kind of a price of entry, right? Like nobody's running 50 miles a week and running the marathon. So, or racing the pro field of the marathon. But I topped out around 100 miles a week when I was training and got back to that after the trials and was running that much after the trials to prepare for this. So I don't trial different brands of shoes, but the shoes I'm in, I get a lot of experience in, a lot of miles in.
I was gonna say, you must have so many shoes that you're like running through, literally.
Yeah, and you know, especially the more, you know, high performance you get, the more you want shoes for different specific purposes. So like, you know, if you're gonna go out and do a fartlek or a threshold run, or if you're just gonna slog around and do a 5 or 6 mile double, you know, you have different shoes.
Right.
And I don't even know that there's like a ton of like intentional thinking about it, but you kind of move towards shoes that you know feel good in different contexts.
Right.
And then of course, you know, when you're on the track, you have flats for that and then stuff for super shoes for the road.
So do you miss the track at all?
Oh, I miss it a lot. Yeah, and I think in particular the last 10 weeks, just thinking about, okay, I want to put in great work for 10 weeks longer than I expected to. You know, I thought February, I'm going to race the first week and then I'm going to get this big break. And so I never really felt like, oh, I missed the track leading into 2024. However, trying to extend myself kind of psychologically for 10 mm-hmm. weeks, I think I feel most myself and feel most kind of at home on a track. And so I even communicated that to my coaches. I said, I'd really like to do some work on the track. And also like that's where my memory of being a really great athlete is too.
Right.
So it was a boost for me, honestly, to get back. So I did. I did some more workouts on the track in the last few weeks. And I think it just kind of lifted my spirits. It felt like home.
I love doing a good track workout because for me, I feel like it's like data, numbers, thing. Like there's no... It's just like
precision.
a set. Yeah.
It's the precision. So when people are asking me, you know, what do you miss about the track? It surprised me, but pretty early on, I kind of dialed into one of the biggest differences for me training from the track to the roads was that you kind of lose that hyper precision. Mm-hmm. So you go out and you do a fartlek on the roads and maybe you're doing 2 minutes on, 3 minutes off, or 5 minutes on and 3 minutes off or something. And you're just kind of going by the watch. And I finish and I think, did I run hard enough? Did I run too hard? You know, a lot of what you're doing is kind of a judgment call. Or even if you're out, you know, because the terrain is different or the weather is different, you're saying, okay, if I want my race pace to be X, I'm going to run X plus 10 to 30 seconds a mile. And it just feels so like there's such a large window. And that was new to me because when you're on the track and you're trying to break 4 minutes, you run 64 for 400 every time you get out.
Right.
And if you run 64 and a little faster here and there, then you're thinking, oh, maybe I can run 358. It's like, it's kind of a math problem.
I was just going to say, like, did you go to college for math?
Yes. I mean, if you want to talk about splits for a 15-minute 5K or a 4-minute 1500, I can rattle off those splits
all day.
That's
awesome. I love that. And so what is it that you love about running? Do Do you love running?
I'm just kidding. Yeah. You know, I love running, but I don't love it every day. Okay. I think that's a little bit of a myth to think that, well, I don't know, maybe there's some really special people out there that like love one thing every day their entire life. But I think with anything, you know, there's days that you get out and you do it so that you're still, okay, I'll keep it to running. There are days where I think I'm running today so that I'm still fit on that beautiful, awesome day and I want to be out here.
Right.
And so that feels kind of motivating to me sometimes. But I don't love it every day because Colorado gets below zero every once in a while. And those are the days where I'm like, it'd be nice to take the day off. But why do I run it? Or why do I love it? I love it for a lot of reasons. And I think it can kind of change over time and change day to day. But it's always fun to do something you know you're good at. You know, it's kind of simple and basic, and I think people don't acknowledge that often enough. If you find something you're good at, lean into it. It's a wonderful thing to soak in that feeling of like, this is something I'm made to do. And then it's just given, you know, I go out for a run, but what it has put together for me in life is the opportunity to travel, the opportunity to meet so many amazing people. Yeah. It's created like long-lasting relationships. Like we mentioned earlier, John and Betsy Hughes, you know, the couple that sells me my very first pair of running shoes, you know, they watch this young kid go from a child to an Olympian, to an Olympic medalist, to running the marathon. And so that journey we got to take together.
Yeah.
They're
amazing.
Yeah. And I'm getting to have that journey now with people that I met when they were young runners. There's a woman on our team at Colorado that she and I were warming up and getting ready for the Olympic trials in 2021. And she showed me, she had a picture of her and I together when I was running professionally at the Boston Indoor Grand Prix.
Okay.
And she was just a middle schooler. So
that's cool.
Those
that's
are
awesome.
Special. Those yeah. are special moments. Yeah.
When you started when you were so young also.
Yeah.
When did you know or think like maybe I'm gonna do this for my career?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked that question because I was not like a protege. I started running really young. We moved states. We moved from Missouri. My dad graduated college, and we moved to Florida for, he was going to be a professor at UCF. And I was in third grade. And so I went out for the after-school running program because it was a way for me to just meet friends.
Yeah.
There's a PE teacher that said, we have this after-school program. Jenny's crazy on the playground. She probably would love it. And I did, of course. And so for the first few years of my quote unquote running career, I just followed my friends. I was just, you know, you're just a kid, you're goofing around, you're running around, you follow your friends. And even when I got into high school, I was good as a freshman and good as a sophomore. But really it was just about kind of following my friends. It was pre-internet with like everything out there. So I didn't really know how I measured up to other kids, and that wasn't something that I was thinking of until you got to the dual meet,
right?
On the weekend or whatever. And so I had a really slow progression into the idea of this being really competitive. And then I remember learning I could get a college scholarship. And that to me was like, that was the spark. Like if I can run well enough to like go far away for school. Like that just felt to me like this fantasy world.
Yeah.
You know, and so finally realized like I can go far away to college, have some opportunity and use running really to get the best education possible. That became my pursuit. So when I finally went on my college visits, I was visiting like Columbia and Duke and Notre Dame thinking like I want to use my running to go to an Ivy League school, stay on the East Coast. I visited Colorado and I just thought, this is my chance. This is my chance to be in the mountains, run, see what I can make out of this. And it was just unbelievable. I mean, my freshman year, I won NCAAs, unexpectedly won NCAAs in the steeplechase. And things just kind of kept rolling from there.
That's amazing. Do you ever, like when you're having a hard day, like try to go back to that place where you loved running and like channel that energy?
Yeah, and it doesn't feel that far away. You know, I think about being the kid that was running at the state championship or, you know, really young. And the first time I broke 4 minutes in the 1500, it was my first pro race of my entire life. And I was still a senior in college, so I was wearing a Colorado uniform. And when I close my eyes and I go back to those memories, they seem like yesterday. So yeah. It's precious to hold on to those things.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And New York City, back to New York City.
Yeah.
It was awesome. It was the best. I raced. That was my first time doing that race too.
Okay.
That was the best day.
It was a beautiful day.
Yeah.
And the course is amazing because you approach New York, you approach the city and the skyline for so long.
Yeah.
So to be able to run up the east side of Manhattan and just see the buildings and kind of, I don't know about you, I was like imagining like New York is this crazy, busy, wild place. Like it's kind of waking up and I'm in the middle of a work day. And yeah. I just kind of felt like that was like really magical and special. And of course, because like we're up at the front and it's a little bit more sparse where we are, I mean, the city felt like it was shut down.
That's
for
amazing.
Us.
Yeah.
And that is unique to experience in New York City. So that yeah. felt really special. And then when we turned to go up 7th to head towards the park,
yeah.
That's when the crowds really kind of started to get a little bit more dense and you really had people cheering for you. And it really felt like the city kind of came alive over the course of the 13 miles we were racing.
Yeah. I felt like I was running and it was so beautiful. It was very crowded in my corral, like in my group that
sure.
I was running in my wave, but I just like do my own thing. And I really loved running over the bridge, over the Manhattan Bridge, and yeah. just getting out of Brooklyn because I was like, in my mind, I was like, just get me out of Brooklyn.
Yeah.
But I loved running up 7th Avenue and just like being in the city, that energy.
Yeah.
I don't think you, even in the marathon.
Yeah.
Which I wonder if you're doing.
They do too. You know,
we'll see.
What you said about the Manhattan Bridge is so poignant to me because, you know, we were just talking about, you know, you close your eyes and you have memories. I think that's kind of the enduring memory for me of that race was going over the bridge because at the time I was reading a book about stories of New Yorkers, just people in the city. And I remember going over the bridge and you can see the buildings mm-hmm. and the skyline. And again, like it was so quiet. It was kind of windy and there were just a few of us racing. And I remember like looking and thinking about all the people in the city. And I mean, this sounds a little bit silly, but I just remember thinking like, it's all a struggle and we're
yeah.
all just trying to make it. And I felt like I'm just this runner out here. I had a bad experience a few weeks ago. I'm hoping Boston will be better. And I'm just out here like everyone else just trying to make it. And it really felt like this kind of unifying emotional experience going over the bridge.
That's New York for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, this has been so great, Jenny. Thanks for stopping by.
Oh, thank you.
And dropping into the podcast.
Thanks again for tuning in to Marnie on the Move. If you like what you hear, leave us a 5-star review in Apple Podcasts. Follow us on social at Marnie on the Move for Facebook and Instagram. Head over to our website, MarnieOnTheMove.com, for more info on this episode, links in the show notes, and of course, sign up for our quarterly newsletter, The Download, to get updates, deals, giveaways, and information on future events.